And my name's Dave Sheldon. I'm going to be your co-host tonight, along with my co-host and the founder of the Healing with the Arts Telesummit, Mary Rockwood Lane. And tonight, Chief Robert and Terry Talltree are going to give us a presentation that's called Finding Your True Self with the Art of Living on Purpose. And we'll tell you a lot more about what all that means. But the story of Robert and Terry actually begins with Terry. And a voice that literally came out of the blue and asked, "Did you do what you came here to do?" Now, this interesting question that came out of the blue was while Terry was hospitalized, completely paralyzed, and wondering if she'd ever walk again. And the voice said, "Did you do what you came here to do?" And she replied, "No, I came here to sing." And that was the beginning of an extraordinary journey to health, to love, to the realization of soul purpose and self-mastery. And Terry and her husband, partner, and soulmate, Chief Robert Talltree, have powerful stories to share of the impact of art in multiple media on personal healing and self-discovery. And tonight, you're going to have a chance to experience a guided meditation and to begin creating your own life map as part of their presentation. Now, Chief Robert and Terry Talltree are world-renowned musical recording artists and so much more. They're really guides to personal transformation for a global audience in 32 countries. And Robert's custom jewelry designs are worn by some of the most well-recognized Native Americans, as well as what they call dominant culture members in many countries. And together, Robert and Terry are mentors of self-mastery to the thousands of students who have participated in their programs over the years. Now, gifted by their own native elders with teaching passed down from the ancient ones, they've been given permission to share these important teachings. As they would say, that we may heal the earth and heal each other. And they do so in unique and powerful ways, blending today's technology with the most profound and timeless messages to bridge the two worlds of the material and spiritual. And their path leads to self-discovery, clarity in life, and finding your true purpose. And tonight, you're invited to join them as we welcome Chief Robert and Terry Talltree to the Healing with the Arts Telesummit. Welcome, Robert and Terry.
Thank you so much, David. I'll translate for you. My husband just spoke to you very, very respectfully in our language, the Ojibwa language, and what he said was, "Hello to all my relatives. Hello, my friends. My name is Tree, reaching and growing toward the sky. I am Elk Clan, and today is a good day."
That's what my native people said, that the first Europeans that first came to this land that we know as the United States. Of course, my nation, the Ojibwa nation, we call it Turtle Island, because we knew that it had massive amount of water around it. My great-grandmother was one of my teachers, along with Chief Little Elk, Chief Thurman Bear, Chief Pontiac, Chief Louis Pontiac, Chief Leon Shenandoah, who I met later in years, and Chief Jake Swamp, and so many more that I had an opportunity, and a blessed opportunity, to walk at their sides and listen to their songs, their stories, and their wisdom. But let us take a brief step back to what began with this particular journey. My father left when I was only 2 years old, so my mother at that time was working three jobs to take care of me, my sister, and my baby brother. And I remember the house that we lived in. was very easy to make impressions upon the floor because the floor was made of dirt. I remember looking through the planks of the walls with that had newspaper stuffed into them and anything else, sometimes rags stuffed in them to prevent the cold winds from coming in. And I also knew how to take tissue paper and put it on the glass and it would freeze to it to be able to also seal the cracks and the holes that were in the windows. And seeking out coal and brush and wood to take and light the stove in which we used to heat that room and to cook upon. And I remember those days, and I remember the people that lived near us that lived the same way and said, this is the way it is, and this is the way it always will be. But my mother, in her vision, she knew that there was more. And so she called upon the native elders of my reservation, and they took me at their side and taught me many things. They treated me as if I was one of their own children, very loving, very caring. And I watched and listened. And it was early in my life that I got to realize that the more I listened, the more I learned. And so I learned, and I walked at their side. And whatever they would ask that needed to be done, I would follow without question, because I knew that their wisdom was what was guiding the moment, as the moment of this time is being guided. You see, we don't have a tendency of setting a whole lot of specific things in motion before these calls. They say, what do you wish to take an address? And then they say, we'd like to speak of this. And I said, then we will speak of that. The thousands of hours in which I wished I could bestow upon you in this moment, but can only take and give you just a little peek of the worthiness of the expression of those elders. Their ancientness showed upon their brow, and their skin was the color of the earth, and their hair was the color of snow, and they were standing in the north of the medicine wheel, for that is where the wisdom takers and the teachers stand and care. And so we can identify them easy when they would walk within the area of our homes by their mannerisms. And we could see that they would take very purposely each step was purposely placed upon Mother Earth. And each thought was also placed, because before every question was posed, they would first greet us in the language to give respect and honor to the lineage and the heritage of our nation and to those that walked before us. That's why I spoke to you in the language, to respectfully speak to you and to them at the same time. And this is the way in which they began. And so I watched when they would take and give that honor to all those that were present. And if we were here and you were standing here, I would be standing in my full native garb, which is intricate with detail from aunties and uncles and those that are still here and those now are walking before us. They had the loving care to create that regalia. You notice I didn't call it a costume. For I'm not pretending to be a Native American. I am a Native American. And the intricacy of the beauty of that regalia reflects upon their love and passion of life and their ability to understand our relationship with nature. And that is why I would be standing here wearing that to honor not only you, but also them. For my mother, who is the matriarch and the oldest of our clan, says, when you stand before greatness, wear your best. And my attire, my regalia, is my best.
I always love to listen to Robert speak. He speaks like a song. You know, he has a beautiful cadence and rhythm, and it's always just from his heart. You know, it's not, he's never reading anything or memorizing anything. He just speaks spontaneously from his heart, and I've learned a lot about art, the art of living, from him, because he is spontaneous and really focused on living in the present moment. And Dave, you started sharing a little bit about my experience when I was in the hospital. And many years ago, I started my life out really trying to be what I thought other people wanted me to be. I wanted desperately to make them proud and get their approval and be the person that I thought that they wanted. And so often I was pleasing people and not really sure of who I really was. From the time I was about, I don't know when I first knew, but at least at about 6 years old, I knew that I wanted to sing. But little by little throughout life, I had experiences that felt like that wasn't such a great idea. I remember especially one time I was in middle school. When I was in school, they called it junior high school. And I was in chorus, and I had a part. I was a low second, and I had a harmony part. And I came home, and I was very excited to be singing this part. It sounded so beautiful to me. And I sang it for my mom, and my mom was an amazing woman, a very, very loving woman, and we had a great relationship. She kind of made a face. I don't even know if she was aware of it, but I was aware of it, and I really got the impression that it didn't sound very good. I wasn't singing the melody. I was singing a harmony, and it, to her, I think, maybe sounded discordant. And from that moment on, I decided I would never sing out loud in front of anybody else again. So I didn't. I sang behind closed doors in cars when no one was with me, but never in front of anyone else again. And little by little, my spirit, my soul started to shrivel. I felt a great sadness, a deep sadness, but I didn't really know why at the time. And one day I found myself checking into a hospital because I was feeling pretty sick and wasn't able to walk. I had to be wheeled in a wheelchair. And it happened suddenly, you know, over a period of a few days. Started with a little bit of numbness in my tailbone and the palms of my hands and my tongue, and then just kind of spread throughout my body. I was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome. And within less than 5 days, I was completely paralyzed and in the intensive care ward. I remember the day that they rolled me back on a gurney into the hospital room. I was really feeling alone in the world, like just so alone. I don't even have any other word for it. I just felt totally separate. And there was nobody else there were two beds in the room, but there wasn't another patient in the other room. And I remember that experience like it was yesterday. There was sunlight streaming in through the window and warming the yellow bedspread that was on the hospital bed. The nurses were very kind. They got me all situated because I couldn't even roll over. I literally couldn't move anything but to wiggle my fingers. And they left, and I was just laying there. You know, they had told me that I'd nearly died, and they really didn't know while I was in intensive care if I was going to live. And then when they moved me out of intensive care, they really didn't know if I'd ever walk again. I couldn't roll over or sit up or even move my head sideways. And I was laying there, and out of what seemed like nowhere, I heard a voice. And it went right through me. It startled me. And I looked over to see if somebody had just walked past the doorway, like maybe I heard someone, you know, walking past, but there was no one there. And I looked over at the window. The window was closed, but I thought maybe somebody was outside the window. There was nobody outside the window. So for the first time in my life, at the risk of looking foolish, because I was really afraid of that, I was always embarrassed and you know, wanting to be invisible. But this was important. Was a turning point in my life. At the risk of looking foolish, I said out loud, "What?" And I heard it again, and it was a very calm voice, but it had an air of authority, not in a negative way, but like a deep wisdom. And it said, "Did you do what you came here to do?" And in that instant, it was as if someone had taken a bow and shot it right through all of the walls I had constructed around my heart. Everything that I put up to keep safe, you know, everything that kept me separate from others so I wouldn't be vulnerable, so I wouldn't feel embarrassed and hurt. And I was sobbing. I mean, Oprah calls it the ugly cry where you can't even catch your breath. I was just sobbing and sobbing. And I don't know how long I cried. It felt like I might never be able to stop. But as I cried, as I let the tears just come and the sound come out of my mouth, it was as if all of that protection just started to melt away. And when I could finally catch my breath, I said out loud, "No, I came here to sing." And I realized for the first time in my life on a very conscious level that little by little I had been giving up my life force. I had been giving up my authentic self and what made my heart happy. Just not for any reason, not for any outcome. And that day I made a promise that no matter how scared I felt, that I was going to sing anyway. And I wasn't thinking about a career. I wasn't thinking about a Grammy. I wasn't thinking about touring, being on stages. I wasn't thinking about anything like that. I was just thinking that my life depended on it. And so from that point on, my life really changed. It wasn't like I wasn't afraid either, I got to say that. When I get up on stage, I started singing, and when I get up on stage, my knees would shake, my lips would quiver, my chin would tremble, my stomach would be tight. But I heard a long time that courage isn't the absence of fear, it's deciding something else is more important. And to me, it was just more important to be real and to show up and to love myself enough that even if no one in the world loved me while I was singing, that I love myself enough to give myself permission to be who I am and do what I came here to do. So that's my story. It's really, you know, it's intimate to me. I don't always share it. It was such a gift. I always say to people who are having a hard time, who are going through a major challenge in their life, that for me, being paralyzed was a tremendous gift and an act of graceful compassion, because without that, I don't think I could. Well, I know I wouldn't be the person that I am today, and I wouldn't be able to really meet people where they're at when they're feeling separate from living the life that they somehow know, instinctively know that they're destined for, and just don't know how to get there, you know. So that for me was maybe the only way I was able to hear it and to get it. It had to stop all the distraction. I really wasn't distracted because I couldn't keep busy doing anything else. It was just me and listening to my inner thoughts and being fully present. I remember a psychologist, I had doctors, I had like specialists for every part of my body, like maybe 8 or so. You know, I had a neurologist and a gastrointestinologist and a pulmonary specialist. And I mean, you name it, I had somebody for every part of my body, physical therapist, occupational therapist, and a psychologist. And I remember one day my psychologist came in and asked me how I was doing, and I said I was doing well, and he looked at me like, really? And I said, I am. I understand why I'm here. And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, I'm the thinker who thinks the thought that creates my reality. And he said, well, what do you mean? Are you blaming yourself that you're in this situation? And I looked at him and I smiled. I didn't have a full smile, but I tried to smile, and I said, oh, no. There's no need to blame anyone, myself or anyone else. But if I'm not feeling like I have some part in creating this, how could I ever expect to have any measure of input for healing, right? So he looked at me and his brows kind of furrowed, and he said, I think I'm going to have to think about that. That was the way I approached it always, was that it was a tremendous opportunity, not always pleasant, not always easy. In fact, it was rarely pleasant and rarely easy, but it was, I think for me, necessary, and it was a transformation in my life. And I wouldn't ask for it again, but I wouldn't trade it for anything either.
Carrie, I want to say thank you for sharing that incredibly powerful story. Because when we have opportunities in our lives where we sort of go into these places of darkness and sickness, it's sometimes in those moments of pain or isolation that we're called back home to ourselves. And that sort of sounds like what happened to you.
Oh, completely. I showed up. You know, there was always a part of me. And, you know, there was another really, there were so many gifts. The gift of expressing myself through music and song was major. But that was just one of many, many things, Mary, because one of the things that I realized was up until that point in my life, I had been skating through life, being able to, and it wasn't all a bowl of cherries, that's not what I mean, but I was able to do pretty well without giving it my full effort. And not even effort, but showing up. You know what I mean? By showing up, I always reserved something because I was afraid of being hurt. I always was afraid of other people's judgment or rejection. And so I always held something back. And that was my the child in me, the little child in my heart, then could rationalize, well, if I didn't succeed at something, it was because I didn't really try.
Right.
It was my get-out-of-jail-free card. And I realized that if I was going to get up and walk out of that hospital, I had to be 100% committed to showing up in my life. I couldn't. The odds were too risky to not do that. And I really was committed and dedicated to a complete recovery. And to not just recovering my body, recovering my soul, you know, recovering my whole heart, living from a whole complete, in our culture we have a medicine wheel, and it's like living fully, mind, body, spirit, and heart, emotion, you know, being whole and complete and intact with my feet on the ground, fully present and grounded and connected to our sacred mother, with the connection to the infinite source of my existence. And to have that on a personal and intimate level, that was what I was going for. I was not settling for 90% or 95%
right.
And thinking that was good enough. I just, that was a huge change in the way that I decided to live my life then.
That's amazing. That's a very, what I would say is a very powerfully shamanic initiation to waking up, to go into that place of illness and then go to that place where you know that your life is going to be totally different. And you actually became, you became someone else, but it's like you became who you truly were meant to be, you know, who
mm-hmm.
you really were born to be.
Mm-hmm. And my personal belief on that is that's what we're all here for. And how we get there, our stories are different. But the journey is about awakening to your true, authentic self and living here on Earth, fully connected. You know, so many people think, well, you know, I'm going to get through this life, and then something's going to happen, and everything's going to be great. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to cross over, and everything's going to be great. And my thought is, it's great right now. this is all a journey. We say Baba Madizwin, it's a journey, the sole purpose of awakening into its full light. And when we realize all we really are is love, you know, that's the source of all creation, all existence is love and light, and that's what we are. And anything that we're experiencing isn't that is just like a flower that hasn't fully opened to let the light in yet. You know, Robert always says we're as exotic and rare as the most magnificent flower, and when we fully open to our true being, that then our fragrance, it just uplifts everyone and everything around us. We illuminate everyone and everything around us simply because we are that light. We don't ever have to go out and change the world or change anyone else. When we awaken and open from the inside out, that spontaneously happens just by the energy that we're emitting, being ourselves, just being ourselves.
I think it's so true. It's so true. And that's what all the teachings are about. So the stories that you share are so compelling and so deep and so rich. It brings us all, at least it brings me to my experience, it brings me right back to my heart and knowing that, getting a sense of being able to understand what my life purpose is. So I love your sharing that story.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, Terry, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Was this this experience that you've been sharing with us and your healing, was that the beginning of How to Live on Purpose?
You know, we didn't actually begin the How to Live on Purpose experience until about 4 years ago. It's been a journey. You know, when I didn't know Robert at that time. We met many, many years later, and Robert has his own, like, amazing healing transformational story. His mother was told he should be institutionalized and would never be anything more than a vegetable. And, you know, he is absolutely one of the most brilliant people I have ever met, and so gifted, and he's touched and changed, transformed so many people's lives that, you know, to think that that's all that someone thought was possible of him, and to know him now, you can't even, you know, it's hard to comprehend that that could have ever been a potential reality. So at the time that Robert and I came together, he was doing the teachings, he was sharing the teachings that he was taught when he was a child with the elders. And for a period of time, we went out for many years, and we were touring, and we were really working with children throughout the United States and doing peace tours throughout the world. We were working with children about finding their purpose because, you know, kids are close to it. We kind of teach it out of them, actually, you know, in the way that we model our own behavior. The kids are very close to it. And if you can allow children to spontaneously express who they are, they will flourish. And they learn to have an amazing sense of confidence and trust in themselves. Most of the adults that we work with have forgotten how to trust themselves. And so it's like a remembering, you know. So we did a lot of work with children, and the great thing about children is then you have cross-generational healing, right? Because they could be who they are, and then parents remember. Like, we have a three-year-old grandson, Tristan, and he was over about a month ago, and he came into the kitchen, and he calls Robert Bunka. He says, "Bunka." And Robert looks at him and leaned down, you know, kind of eye level, and he said, "Yes, little one." And he said, "I woke up." Robert said, "You woke up?" And he said, "Yeah, I woke up to play." And that's what we're remembering as adults. We woke up to play. We're here not to beat ourselves up and constantly criticize and compare and judge ourselves about how we don't measure up. We're here to be the unique expression that we are. And there's nobody, you know, when I was laying in that bed, I thought to myself, you know, okay, I'm going to sing. And I had this awareness, like, who do you think you are to judge the voice that you have? It's like a whole new take on ego, right? Because we're used to thinking about ego like, oh, I'm all that. I'm such a big deal. But the flip side of ego is the criticism, the comparison, the condemnation, the who'd want to see my art, who'd want to hear my voice, who'd want to see me, you know, act or whatever our creative expression, read the words that I write. There's that internal dialogue of, why would anybody want to hear this from me or see this from me? That's ego. That's the conditioned mind holding us in this very little box, very little, we're compartmentalized. So when I heard that, I'm like, yeah, who am I to judge my voice? I'm not the one who made my voice. I'm just supposed to use it. And it's not up to me to sound like somebody else. They're already doing that. You know, if you're an artist, there's an artist doing what you're pretending to try to copy. So just don't even bother being a copy. We always tell the kids, you know, what's more valuable, a copy or an original? We all know that it's an original that's a lot more valuable. So don't waste your time trying to be like somebody else. That's already being done. It just it reduces you rather than expands you.
Terry, you mentioned a moment ago the creative process, and I know creativity has been a big part for you guys in this journey of self-discovery and personal healing.
Yeah,
and
you know, Robert,
you express that in different ways in your music and the storytelling, of course, that's part of you know, so much an important part and a wonderful part of your culture, and just the way that you guys, even just talking with you, just casually, sometimes you guys will just burst into story, so to speak, and you start telling this compelling story, this profound story, and all of the music, the creative art, everything that you guys do has been such a big part of not only your personal healing, but also, as you were saying, helping your students discover or rediscover their true purpose.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that that I really learned from Robert is that the soul really communicates in symbols and images. It's, that's, you know, the spiritual connection. That's why for Indigenous people, dreams and visions are so highly recognized and valued. They're not dismissed. They're not like, oh, that's just a dream. You know, they're very, very honored and valued, and we take time for them to discuss them, to share them, and to acknowledge what's happening with that, the communication. And so any kind of creative expression, almost every one of the sessions that we have when we're working with people one-on-one, and in all of the programs that we develop, there's some component of self-expression. And it's so much more pure, I think, and I don't mean that as a like good, bad, or right or wrong kind of a statement, but I think it's easier sometimes to just allow the expression to come through you in whatever way that it comes through, whether you're painting or writing or singing or playing an instrument or whatever it is. It allows the energy, you know, if we remember that we're all energy, that everything is energy, it allows the energy to flow more spontaneously and be expressed. And so much of what I experienced when I was in the hospital was just really stuck energy. You know, I mean, I had like packed it in there. I'd compartmentalized and packed in a lot of unexpressed feeling. And so being able to express that and let that out and just let it be what it is. So often when we experience the creativity that flows through us, it just blows our mind. I know Robert and I were walking in Manitou Springs several years ago, and we went into a little shop, and we walked in and had a really good feel in the shop, and there was this incredible music, this beautiful, beautiful music being played. And we were Yeah, I think Robert said, that's really nice. I'm like, yeah, really, it just feels really good. And we were in there for several minutes before we both stopped and looked at each other, and we said, isn't that Echoes of the Heart? Isn't that our CD? Like, we honestly really didn't even, we were experiencing it. Because when creativity comes through you, it's free. You know what I mean? It's not like you're
a great story.
You know what I mean? It's like, and then
so
we, you're almost awe. You're like, wow,
so
where did that come from?
I love it.
So we were talking about the aspects of the things in which we have been directed to do, and I'm very passionate about waking individuals into their inner healing. And the healing can be done through so many vessels. Everybody thinks it's only from one direction. Like somebody has a cold, they go directly to a doctor. Well, what did they do before the doctors were here? Well, with my particular nation, we would go to the elm tree and peel a little bit of the bark off and chew in that white pulp of the bark, and that would help to contain the fever. So the vibration of that live plant was what we used, along with the numerous other plants, to help create a balance. And we would bring the medicine people and the spiritual people in, and they would take and utilize their skills. And so they knew that healing can be done with a sound, like when I use the thousands of years old language of mine, that's healing. It can also be done with a painting, a meal, a song, a plant. These are all directly channels that individuals can take and utilize toward healing. And so it is no one exact way that's right for every person. But intuitively, if they really ask themselves, they could find the right way instead of getting into the logical aspects of how people have been tuned in the culture of today. And so when we talk about the arts and how they're expressive, they are there for a purpose. They're much more than what we see. When I sculpt a piece or make a shield up like out of leather, and I put specific design or symbols to it, people just feel at peace. And I said that's the property of the healing of that moment, and that was what was intended in the vibrational creation of it when it was made. My mind was not wandering anywhere else but into the particular moment, to the next moment, to the next moment in its creation. And when somebody came up and they go, oh, that's beautiful. My brother-in-law came and saw a large carving, a kashina. It's about 4 foot tall that I carved. And he literally went up and had to touch it. He said, that is beautiful. And he was getting the expression of what was transpired in the tranquility of the creation of that piece and allowing it to transform from where it had been taken and bulldozed on a beautiful piece of land and left for as nothing was there, as garbage. And I went and lovingly picked it up, put some tobacco out, said thank you to the great mystery of the creator, and then took it home. And because it was still fresh and new, I took and lovingly peeled its bark back so it would reveal the beautifulness of its grain. And then it spoke to me on what needed to be taken away to make it something more. And this is the way in which those native elders taught. They said that the mind is the most powerful thing in the world, but people let it go all over the place because they don't guide it. The teachers in which I had were the direct teachers of descendants of what people that walked upon this earth beforehand. So when I speak of these things, I speak as if they were from their heart to my heart to your heart. I did not go to someone else and learn it from them and them and them, or go for a book or go to some big university to be able to teach these things. I walked alongside those elders. And now I feel not as an obligation but as a blessing to be able to continue to walk forward. And as I integrate today's energies and abilities to be able to take and move these particular energies through the new vehicles that have been created by man, it allows me to be able to reach people all the way around the world with these thoughts and with these processes. And they still are effective because wisdom taught in the right way never becomes obsolete. And so when we teach these particular things, we teach them with our open heart to those individuals that are open with their heart. Because I know that if I go up to someone and I see that their energy is off and their mind, their body, their spirit, their emotion, and I try to take and help them, if their heart is not open, I might as well talk to a wall. So I wait patiently for the right questions to be asked. And when those questions are asked, that gives me an opportunity to take and open up that heart more and see and reveal some of the ancient mysteries of the nations that walked upon this land. And so healings definitely is through the arts in all different types. When you take a photograph of a beautiful bird, that is a healing. When you take a big breath right before you speak, empowering your spirit and your physical being, that is a healing. And when I play a drone flute, which was designed by my nation and lost for thousands of years and then finally found, and then one was taken and sent to me, that's used for healing too. And we will have an opportunity to let some things go because of that flute. And that's what we'll do in just a few moments.
Mm.
Well, healings are done in many arts. And that is the way in which all the nations took and walked their journey upon this earth. The elders said they knew in our medicine wheel, we had four colors of humanity. We're the first beginning colors of humanity, and it showed it upon that medicine wheel. No color was bigger or smaller than the other. Each was equal to each other, and united they made a completion of a circle, because all things are made of circles. And science has proved that. They continue to take and dig down and magnify things more and more and more, and each time they magnify it more and more and more, they find even more circles. And I said, how much do you need to dig down to come and finally accept that that is the way things are? And so I express this energy to you, and you are listening to it, and you will express it to someone else, but eventually it will return and complete a circle just as we walk upon this earth. And when we are born, we start that journey in the east, and we walk toward the south, and we become a young person, then we become a young adult, and then we become an elder. And when we complete that moment of time of our physical being, we will have made a completion. When we walk over and then begin a new circle when we meet our relatives. These are all teachings of those elders. These are all ways in which can be re-embraced by humanity. So I am passionate about awakening people's hearts. I'm passionate about getting them to realize where their power is, because people give either they give their power away. They give their three arrows away, their thoughts, their words, and their actions. They give them away, and that is why some people lose their lives. That is why some people are incarcerated. That's why, because they give their power away. They seek the wrong individuals. They use their mind and think, well, this person is very strong or very powerful. But that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for the one that's the quietest, because that one has the wisdom. And so when we created Baba Manizawan, the journey, we took as much as we could to be able to kind of package it so people would have something to hang on to, something to awaken themselves with. And so it has parts of it where they are awakening their creativity. It has parts of it gets them into a deeper thought. It is because by design this is the way it needs to be. It's not the way I want it to be. It's the way it was done. And without question, I continue to create these things to the best of my ability and my recall of those moments. I create it by painting it to the talking leaves, which we call books or paper today. And that's how we have a tendency of taking and moving that energy forward. My family, each of the people of my nation at one time, there were specific families that had specific dominant characteristics about them. There were those that knew how to do the track. They were the best hunters. And there was those that also were the war chiefs, and then there was the peace chiefs, and then there was the herbalists, and there was the basket makers, and there was the bow makers, and all these individual families had these specific characteristics which seemed to naturally permeate from generation to generation. But my family knew dreams and visions and symbols. And so it worked down through my mother, and she taught me. And then my uncle embraced it later before he crossed over, my uncle Young Thunder. And so I stand, and I still think and wait. And so when people speak to me, I don't always hear words. Sometimes, or many times, I see symbols. And those symbols awaken the aspects of me being able to mirror things back to them so they see where they stand in the painting of life. That is where we are today. And so my heart is open to those that open their hearts and realize that this is part, if this resonates within their heart, then they need to take and step forward into that light and express who they are, because that the elders, the ancient ones, said if all human beings followed what they were born to do, there would be no war, no dis-ease, but there would be great peace in that very moment. And there would be great joy and happiness too, because people would know into the very core, their very essence, and their very circle of being that they were here. Oma, Oma, they were here. They would be standing strong and straight and singing and painting and sculpting and dancing, and all the pieces of the puzzle would be together and it would form a circle. That's what we are speaking of. Baba Madhizawan, the journey. So I ask you in this moment to set all things aside. I ask you to take, and whatever is stressing you, whatever is pressure upon your heart or your mind or your spirit or your physical being, I want you to just close your eyes, and I want you to visualize those things just flying away like wings on a bird. That would be the wonderful thing that I can give to you in this moment. And that flute in which I spoke to you will help and be that vessel. Ah, one of my relatives just flew by the window here.
So wherever you are, as long as you're not driving, we ask you to just set anything down. You won't need to take any notes. Robert's going to play this healing flute, this ancient healing flute for you, and we'll guide you through a meditation, a brief visualization. Just take a moment to bring your awareness to where you are right now. And take a gentle deep breath in and let it go. Feel the support of the earth beneath you. Gifts that are being you look beneath you and you see the beauty of the Mother Earth, gentle breezes moving every tiny leaf and tree. Moment to bring your awareness back to the present moment. Feel your feet beneath you and wiggle your toes and your hands, and when you're ready, no rush, when you're ready, gently open your eyes and be here now. It's like an inner shower.
We had one lady.
Thank
out.
You so much, folks. That was absolutely wonderful.
You're welcome.
And we've only got a couple of minutes left, as much as I hate to say so, but I do have one other question. How can all of the folks on the line here, for those people who are interested, how can they continue to take this journey with you guys?
I love that. You know, Robert's been sharing about the experience of a program that we share called The Journey, Baba Madiswin, The Journey. It's a 30-day guided experience. And during that time, we interact personally with people through the private membership area for fellow journeyers. And you get to experience your personal connection with the seven sacred directions and get a little closer and more intimate understanding of your relationship with the medicine wheel. And the medicine wheel is a powerful, powerful, not only a symbol, but a diagnostic tool and compass for your life purpose, your soul purpose for being here. It's actually integrated with a project where you visually express your purpose through this life circle art project that you do as you're going through these 30 days. And it's a beautiful experience. We hear so many people saying, oh my gosh, I'm having so many things come to my awareness about, you know, how I have limited myself in terms of how I can express who I am in this world. And I'm finding so much freedom in doing this course, and I'm finding so much joy, and I'm finding that things are getting so much easier, and I'm finding an inner calm and a peace that I've been longing for and didn't know how to get there, and it's happening effortlessly and spontaneously for me. So the journey program, the 30-day guided experience, can be found at How to Live on Purpose. And I'll spell that out. It's actually all the words spelled out. How, H-O-W, to, T-O, live, L-I-V-E, on, O-N, purpose, P-U-R-P-O-S-E, howtoliveonpurpose.com/journey, J-O-U-R-N-E-Y. And the process of it, there's a book that you can download immediately and get into the process of it. But each and every day you're guided with a daily audio that helps to deepen your understanding about how to connect with this energy personally. And as Robert said, wisdom is wisdom. It's universal. It's for all people. The medicine wheel is a powerful tool for helping to find your balance in your life. And I spoke earlier about finding the balance between mind, body, spirit, and emotion. And the wheel is a very, very effective way to do that. So the program gives you the tools for how to do that. And then there's an expanded and advanced audio library that you can get with that if you choose. And there are deep conversations that we've had with our mastery community. And one of those recordings includes guest, our clan matriarch, Akogishnakwe, End of Day Woman, sharing in her 80 years of walking upon Mother Earth her wisdom about these ways. So it's a beautiful, beautiful program. It's a great way to really continue the work. And to, if this energy feels good and resonates with you, we just, from our heart to your heart, say, you know, come on in, the water's warm. Well, we welcome you. In the game, right? It's very nurturing, isn't it, Dave? It's a very nurturing.
It's wonderful.
Wonderful.
And what is someone's investment to get started on the journey?
Well, there are two options available. They can get started for as little as $97, and that gets the complete. You know, you get the whole 30-day guided experience, the downloadable ebook, every single day, an audio interaction within the community, and our personal commitment to respond to any question or comment, insight that you're sharing while you're doing the 30-day process. Included in that is also a live weekly call in our Voyager Gold community, which is where Robert and I come each week and bring in teachings within the community.
Yes, and there's so much more, but we're out of time now, and it's time for us to go on to the next presentation. So let
Fabulous.
Me just remind everybody that you're talking about the journey, and that's at howtoliveonpurpose.com. And thank you so much, Robert and Terry, for being here. Just an absolutely wonderful presentation, and your guided meditation and Robert's flute music was just absolutely wonderful. And it's just so in tune with what we're doing here at Healing with the Arts Telesummit. So thank you so much, guys, for being here.
Thank you both
so much
and for the work that you're doing in the world. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.